This saint. But if you're talking about those periods of Christianization, evangelization, it was brutal, I mean, towards indigenous people. You know, to this day, in our, you know, Latin America, you know, indigenous people are at the bottom of the pyramid, and the church is a contributor to that. And I think that this guy, Pope Francis, is asking us to change that. But the truth of the matter is that indigenous people were oppressed and decimated, killed, raped, pillaged, their lands were taken, you know, all in the name of God. And for that, I think that the church needs to take responsibility.
Pope Francis visits D.C. and talks immigration, justice, and climate change. All that and more coming up next. And welcome to this special expanded edition of Thursday's Community Watch and Comment for September 24th, 2015 on 89.3 WPFW Pacifica's listener-powered station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. On the ground and on the ground show.org are devoted to coverage of social justice activists and activism on the streets and in the suites of power, whether that is here in the DMV, across the nation, or around the planet. I'm Esther Avaram here on this historic day in the nation's capital when hundreds are gathered, you know, it could be thousands by now at this moment on the National Mall to hear Pope Francis as he addresses United States Congress and to be heard on a variety of issues, including climate, immigration, income inequality, and the controversial canonization of Junipero Serra, who established Catholic missions in California, that historians say led to the extermination of tens of thousands of indigenous people. Voices from the mall will include those gathered for the Pope Francis Moral Action on Climate Justice Rally, a national and international mobilization of musicians, faith leaders, and climate activists, including the Reverend William Barber, musicians like Sean Paul and Moby, Dolores Huerta of the United Farm Workers Union, and Bishop Pedro Jimeno Barreto, Archbishop of Huancayo in Peru, and delegate for the Pan-Amazon Ecclesial Network. Also in the first hour, we'll hear from local activists on the mall today who have been fasting for more than 2 weeks to end the controversial and destructive practice of fracking or hydraulic fracturing for oil and natural gas. And last but not least, D.C.-based activists including Brigitte Roussan, who grew up in the Catholic Church and began her social justice work in D.C.'s Catholic community. Many of them were at yesterday's Mass at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception at Catholic University. And we'll go to that. And in the second hour, it gets even better. Archbishop George Augustus Stallings of the Imani Temple National Cathedral African-American Catholic Congregation has promised to stop by, and we hopefully will also get to take your calls. So, as always, we have a lot for you, even in today's expanded two-hour-plus edition, starting with these special headlines about the Pope. So before the Pope's visit to the U.S., he made a historic visit to Cuba, marking the first time a Pope has visited that island nation since diplomatic relations have been normalized between Cuba and the U.S., though, of course, the U.S. economic blockade against Cuba remains in place. And Pope Francis is actually credited with helping to pave the way for that normalization and the reopening of the Cuban embassy here in D.C. and the opening of the U.S. embassy in Havana. In a White House address in December, President Obama thanked Pope Francis for his mediation efforts that brought together President Obama with President Raul Castro in Rome and in Panama. Obama says that the Pope's moral example, quote, shows us the importance of pursuing the world as it should be rather than simply settling for the world as it is, end quote. On Tuesday, President Obama welcomed Pope Francis to the White House, where the Pope outlined major areas of concern, the rights and dignity of immigrants, ending all forms of discrimination, and the precarious state of the Earth's environment.
Good morning. Mr. President, I'm deeply grateful for your welcome in the name of the all Americans. As the son of an immigrant family, I'm happy to be a guest in this country, which was largely built by such families. I look forward to these days of encounter and dialogue, in which I hope to listen to and share many of the hopes and dreams of the American people. During my visit, I will have the honor of addressing Congress, where I hope, as a brother of this country, to offer words of encouragement to those called to guide the nation's political future in fidelity to its founding principles. I will also travel to Philadelphia for the 8th World Meeting of Families to celebrate and support the institutions of marriage and the family at this critical moment in the history of our civilization. Mr. President, together with their fellow citizens, American Catholics are committed to building a society which is truly tolerant and inclusive, to safeguarding the rights of individuals and communities, and to rejecting every form of injustice, discrimination. With countless other people of goodwill, they are likewise concerned that efforts to build a just and wisely ordered society respect their deepest concerns and the right to religious liberty. That freedom remains one of America's most precious possessions. And as my brothers, the United States bishops, have reminded us, all are called to be vigilant, precisely as good citizens, to preserve and defend that freedom from everything that would threaten or compromise it. Mr. President, I find it encouraging that you are proposing an initiative for reducing air pollution. Accepting the urgency, it seems clear to me also that climate change is a problem we can no longer be left to a future generation. When it comes to the care of our common home, we are living at a critical moment of history. We still have time to make the change needed to bring about a sustainable and integral development, for we know that things can change. such change demands on our part a serious and responsible recognition, not only of the kind of the world we may be leaving to our children, but also to the millions of people living under a system which has overlooked them. Our common home has been part of this group of the excluded, which cries out to heaven and which today powerfully strikes our homes, our cities, our societies. To use a telling phrase of the Reverend Martin Luther King, we can say that we have defaulted on a promissory note, and now is the time to honor it. We know by faith that the Creator does not abandon us. He never forsakes His loving plan or repents of having created us. Humanity has the ability to work together in building our common home. As Christians inspired by this certainty, we wish to commit ourselves to the conscious and responsible care of our common home. Mr. President, the efforts which were recently made to mend broken relationships and to open new doors to cooperation within our human family represent positive steps along the path of reconciliation, justice, and freedom. I would like all men and women of goodwill in this great nation to support the efforts of the international community to protect the vulnerable in our world and to stimulate integral and inclusive models of development. So that our brothers and sisters everywhere may know the blessings of peace and prosperity which God wills for all His children. Mr. President, once again, I thank you for your welcome, and I look forward to these days in your country. God bless America.
That was Pope Francis speaking Tuesday at the White House before he headed a parade in downtown where he kissed and hugged children. Well, when we come back, not everybody was so happy yesterday at the Mass at Catholic University where Junipero Serra was canonized. Stay with us.
Oh.
That was the combined choir from local Catholic congregations singing at the jam-packed Mass at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception at Catholic University. The Mass and canonization of Junipero Serra is undoubtedly the most controversial part of the trip so far for the Pope. While the Church defends making Serra a saint, Native groups say that he was responsible for the deaths of 150,000 Native Americans. D.C.-based activists Bridget Roussan and Kike Avriles gave their thoughts during and after the Mass. I'm at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception, and this is the second day of the Pope's visit here to Washington, D.C., and we're right here on the grounds before the Mass is about to start, on the grounds outside the shrine. And I'm here with Bridget Roussan. She's a longtime social justice activist here in the Washington, D.C. area, and she's also someone who grew up as a Catholic, and while she doesn't practice any longer, she's maintained the link between spirituality and activism through her work now at Plymouth Congregational Church and in other organizations around the city. So, Bridget, tell me about being here. I know you got the tickets as a birthday present from your sister, and you say you have mixed feelings about, on the one hand, being here at a very special event for a lot of people, but also having these mixed feelings about both the Mass, both the Pope, and also the canonization of Serra.
Yes, I tell you, it's an amazing feeling to be here and to see people that I came to know years ago when I first came to D.C. and discovered that African-American Catholic is an ethnicity. And so those experiences stay with me, the social justice experiences of being in the church and having been at St. Augustine and part of the 14th and U Streets Coalition doing community organizing around tenant rights and community economic development back in the day. And we've got, you know, activists who have been situated there at St. Augustine for office space, including Empower DC, and, you know, the founder of One DC that I got to know through St. Augustine. So I feel like there's a rich heritage of social justice in Catholicism, but especially in the Black Catholic churches here in D.C. So I'm glad to be, you know, reconnected with that.
And so tell me, before I came here and I looked really quick, and on the St. Augustine website, I think it was actually described as the mother of Black Catholicism in the city.
It was actually the first Black Catholic church established in the city, and there was a fundraiser held on the White House lawn when President Lincoln was in office to help raise money for it. And it started out as a school, because the schools were not available to Black kids. So it started out as a school and then went on from there. And I'm really proud that St. Augustine still has a Black Catholic school where some other schools had to become charter schools.
So in addition to this storied history in terms of Catholicism, you were saying that it also has a real place in terms of social justice activism here in the city, in the region.
Yeah, definitely. So as I said, you know, there are some roots there in terms of our community organizing groups, our multi-issue community organizing groups, and also a very strong Catholic presence in Washington Interfaith Network and some of the organizing that's going on with that, you know, that approach. So it's there. The social justice tradition is very strong in the church, and Black Catholics have played a role, and people working with Black Catholics have played a strong role. I just think that it's unfortunate that we have yet to see some real emphasis on eradicating racism from the church and using the resources of the Catholic Church to eradicate racism in our country and in our world. That's something that our Black Catholic bishops have been very strong about, and we have also had, and we've had pastoral letters that are very clear about our responsibility as Christians to eradicate racism starting within the church. I would love to see this Pope speak out more about that, and I would love to see some consideration for women's ordination as well.
My name is Kike Aviles, and I am from El Salvador, but I'm a Washingtonian. I live in Northeast, but I grew up in Northwest, in Columbia Heights, Mount Pleasant, and Adams Morgan. I really think he's a different type of pope. You know, I think he's saying things that other popes have not been willing to say, you know, just in terms of social and political conditions around the world.
Right.
Consumerism, this the throwaway culture, climate change, immigration. You know, the plight of refugees around the world, and how I think the gospel, you know, and will want us to be more welcoming, more open people towards others. You know, it's the whole concept of welcoming the stranger. And, you know, nowadays, you know, I think immigrants are being used as a pawn, as a political football, to pit us against one another. And, you know, and we're denying them their humanity and their human dignity, you know. And I think that the Pope is asking us to question these things. So it's interesting, you know, because he's a Latin American, you know, son of immigrants, who I think, you know, understands that part of the issue.
How about the canonization of Sarah?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, there's something to be said about that, you know, to have the church, you know, play that role, and to a certain extent still there is still some of that
with
the church being a part of the oppressive systems, you know. But I don't know much about this saint, but if you're talking about those periods of Christianization or evangelization, it was brutal, I mean, towards indigenous people. You know, to this day, in our, you know, in Latin America, you know, indigenous people are at the bottom of the pyramid, and the church is a contributor to that. And I think that this guy, Pope Francis, is asking us to change that. But the truth of the matter is that indigenous people were oppressed and decimated, killed, raped, pillaged, their lands were taken, you know, all in the name of God. And for that, I think that the church needs to take responsibility, and you know, and I think it's obligated to make you know, some amends to what happened.
Those were voices of attendees at yesterday's Mass at the Basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception at Catholic University. When we come back, we'll be going back to Capitol Hill, where Pope Francis is expected to address Congress at the top of the hour. And we will also hear more from the hundreds of people gathered to hear his address and also to speak out on climate change. Stay with us.
Gracias.
por este admirable don. Recordamos tu sacrificio, recordamos tu sacrificio.
The church that welcomes your holiness embraces people from every continent and numerous ethnic and cultural backgrounds. We gather in worship and seek to reflect your call to be missionary disciples. You can see that this church shows the face reflective of Africa, Central and South America, Mexico, India, Asia, Europe, as well as our own Native Americans. Not far from here, in 1634, the first Catholics arrived in what is now the United States and began the evangelization effort that we see so wonderfully realized today at this great basilica of the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception and the campus of the Catholic University of America. United in faith, we seek always to grow in the joy of the gospel. Today, Your Holiness has just celebrated the canonization of Saint Junipero Serra, who offers us an example of the tireless effort to share the gospel as we seek today to enrich our human culture with the great law of love of God and love of neighbor. We also try to care for our common home, the good earth. All of us at this Mass profess our faith and strive to live it in service and love. We take seriously your call in Laudato Si to face the challenges of our day, and to do so with respect for the dignity of each person, concern for one another, especially the marginalized and poor, and care for the good earth, God's gift to us, now and for generations yet to come. And we look to you, Holy Father, for renewed inspiration so that we might truly be.
We're now going to go to Pope Francis addressing Congress.
Members of Congress, I have the high privilege and distinct honor of presenting to you Pope Francis of the Holy See.
Mr. Vice President, Mr. Speaker, honorable members of the Congress, dear friends, I am most grateful for your invitation to address this joint session of Congress in the land of the free at the home of the brave. I would like to think that the reason for this is that I too am a son of this great continent from which we have all received so much and toward which we share a common responsibility. Each son or daughter of a given country has a mission, a personal and social responsibility. Your own responsibility as members of Congress is to enable this country by your legislative activity to grow as a nation. You are the face of its people. They are representatives. You are called to defend and preserve the dignity of your fellow citizens in the tireless and demanding pursuit of the common good. For this is the chief aim of all politics. A political society endures when it seeks as a vocation to satisfy common needs by stimulating the growth of all its members, especially those in situations of greater vulnerability or risk. Legislative activity is always based on the care of the 40 people. To this, you have been invited, called, and convened by those who elect you. Yours is a work which makes me reflect in two ways on the figure of Moses. On the one hand, the patriarch and lawgiver of the people of Israel symbolizes the need of people to keep alive their sense of unity by means of just legislation. On the other, the figure of Moses leads us directly to God, and thus to the transcendent dignity of the human being. Moses provides us with a God synthesis of a walk. You are asked to protect by means of the law the image and likeness fashioned by God on every human life. Today, I would like not only to address you, but through you, the entire people of the United States, here together with the representatives, I would like to take this opportunity to dialogue with the many thousands of men and women who strive each day to do a honest day's work, to bring home the daily bread, to save money, and one step at a time to build a better life for their families. These are men and women who are not concerned simply with paying their taxes, but in their own quiet way sustain the life of society. They generate solidarity by their actions, and they create organizations which offer a helping hand to those most in need. I would also like to enter into dialogue with the many elderly persons who are a storehouse of wisdom forged by experience and who seek in many ways, especially through voluntary work, to share their stories and their insights. I know that many of them are retired, but still active. They keep working to build up this land. I also want to dialogue with all those young people who are working to realize their great and noble aspirations, who are not led astray by facile proposals, and who face difficult situations, often as a result of immaturity on the part of many adults. I wish to dialogue with all of you, and I would like to do so through the historical memory of your people. My visit takes place at a time when men and women of goodwill are marking the anniversaries of several great Americans. The complexities of history, and the reality of human weakness notwithstanding, these men and women, for all their many differences and limitations, were able, by hard work and self-sacrifice, some at the cost of their lives, to build a better future. They shaped fundamental values which endure forever in the spirit of the American people. A people with this spirit can live through many crises, tensions, and conflicts, while always finding the resources to move forward and to do so with dignity. These men and women offer us a way of seeing and interpreting reality. In honoring their memory, we are inspired, even amid conflicts and in the here and now of each day, to draw upon our deepest cultural reserve. I would like to mention four of these Americans: Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King, Dorothy Day, and Thomas Merton. This year marks the 150th anniversary of the assassination of President Abraham Lincoln, the guardian of liberty, who labored tirelessly that this nation under God might have a new birth of freedom. Building a future of freedom requires love of the common good and cooperation in a spirit of subsidiarity and solidarity. All of us are quite aware of and deeply worried by the disturbing social and political situation of the world today. Our world is increasingly a place of violent conflict, hatred, and brutal atrocities, committed even in the name of God and of religion. We know that no religion is immune from forms of individual delusion or ideological extremism. This means that we must be specially attentive to every type of fundamentalism, whether religious or of any other kind. A delicate balance is required to combat violence perpetrated in the name of a religion, an ideology, or an economic system, while also safeguarding religious freedom, intellectual freedom, and individual freedoms. But there is another temptation which we must specially guard against: the simplistic reductionism which sees only good or evil, or if you will, the righteous and sinners. The contemporary world, with its open wounds, which affect so many of our brothers and sisters, demands that we confront every form of polarization, which would divide it into these two camps. We know that in the attempt to be rid of enemy without, we can be tempted to feed the enemy within, to imitate the hatred and violence of tyrants and murderers is the best way to take their place. That is something which you, as people, reject. Our response must instead be one of hope and healing, of peace and justice. We are asked to summon the courage and the intelligence to resolve today's many geopolitical and economic crises, even in the developed world, the effects of unjust structures and actions are all too apparent. Our efforts must aim at restoring hope, righting wrongs, maintaining commitments, and thus promoting the well-being of individuals amongst peoples. We must move forward together as one in a renewed spirit of fraternity and solidarity, cooperating generously for the common good. The challenges facing us today call for a renewal of that spirit of cooperation which has accomplished so much good throughout the history of the United States. The complexity, the gravity, and the urgency of these challenges demand that we pool our resources and talents and resolve to support one another with respect for our differences and our convictions of conscience. In this land, the various religious denominations have greatly contributed to building and strengthening society. It is important that today, as in the past, the voice of faith continue to be heard. For it is a voice of fraternity and love which tries to bring out the best in each person and in each society. Such cooperation is a powerful resource in the battle to eliminate new global forms of slavery, born of great injustices, which can be overcome only through new policies and new forms of social consensus. Politics is, instead, an expression of our compelling need to live as one in order to build as one the greatest common good, that of a community which sacrifices particular interests in order to share in justice and peace its goods, its interests, its social life. I do not underestimate the difficulty that this involves, but I encourage you in this effort. here to, I think, of the march which Martin Luther King led from Selma to Montgomery 50 years ago as part of the campaign to fulfill his dream of full civil and political rights for African Americans. That dream continues to inspire us all, and I am happy that America continues to be, for many, a land of dreams. Dreams which lead to action, to participation, to commitment. Dreams which awaken what is deepest and truest in the life of the people. In recent centuries, millions of people came to this land to pursue the dream of building a future in freedom. We, the people of this continent, are not fearful of foreigners, because most of us were once foreigners. I say this to you as the son of immigrants, knowing that so many of you are also descendants of immigrants. Tragically, the rights of those who were here long before us were not always respected. For those peoples and their nations, from the heart of American democracy, I wish to reaffirm my highest esteem and appreciation. Those first contacts were often turbulent and violent, but we know that is very difficult to judge the past by the criteria of the present. Nonetheless, when the stranger in our midst appeals to us, we must not repeat the sins and the errors of the past. We must resolve now to live as nobly and as justly as possible, as we educate new generations not to turn their back on our neighbors and everything around us. Building a nation calls us to recognize that we must constantly relate to others, rejecting a mindset of hostility in order to adopt one of reciprocal subsidiarity in a constant effort to do our best. I'm confident that we can do this. Our world is facing a refugee crisis of a magnitude not seen since the Second World War. This presents us with great challenges and many hard decisions. On this continent, 2,000 of persons are led to travel north in search of a better life for themselves and for their loved ones, in search of greater opportunity. It is not what we want for our own children. We must not be taken aback by the numbers, but rather view them as persons, seeing their faces and listening to their stories, trying to respond as best we can to their situation, to respond in a way which is always human, just, and fraternal. We need to avoid a common temptation nigh awaits to discard whatever proves troublesome. Let us remember the golden rule: do unto others as you do unto others as you will have them do unto you. This rule points us in a clear direction. Let us treat others with the same passion and compassion with which we want to be treated. Let us seek for others the same possibilities which we seek for ourselves. Let us help others to grow as we would like to be helped ourselves. In a word, if we want security, let us give security. If we want life, let us give life. If we want opportunities, let us provide these opportunities. The yardstick we use for others will be the yardstick which time uses for us. The golden rule also reminds us of our responsibility to protect and defend human life at every stage of its development. This conviction has led me from the beginning of my ministry to advocate at different levels the global abolition of the death penalty. I am convinced that this way is the best, since every life is sacred. Every human person is endowed with inalienable dignity, and society can only benefit from the rehabilitation of those convicted of crimes. Recently, my brother bishops here in the United States renewed the call for the abolition of the death penalty. Not only do I support them, but I also offer encouragement to all those who are convinced that a just and necessary punishment must never exclude the dimension of hope and the goal of rehabilitation. In these times, when social concerns are so important, I cannot fail to mention the servant of God, Dorothy Day, who founded the Catholic Worker Movement. Her social activism, her passion for justice and for the cause of the oppressed were inspired by the gospel, her faith, and the example of the saints. How much progress has been made in this area, in so many parts of the world? How much has been done in these first years of the third millennium to raise people out of extreme poverty? I know that you share my conviction that much more still needs to be done, and in times of crisis and economic hardship, a spirit of global solidarity must not be lost. At the same time, I would encourage you to keep in mind all those people around us who are trapped in a cycle of poverty. They too need to be given hope. The fight against poverty and hunger must be fought constantly and on many fronts, especially in its course. I know that many Americans today, as in the past, are working to deal with this problem. It goes without saying that part of this great effort is the creation and distribution of wealth. The right use of natural resources, the proper application of technology, and the harnessing of the spirit of enterprise are essential elements of an economy which seeks to be modern, inclusive, and sustainable. Business is a noble vocation directed to producing wealth and improving the world. It can be a fruitful source of prosperity from the area in which it operates, especially if it sees the creation of jobs as an essential part of its service to the common good. This common good also includes the earth, a central theme of the encyclical, which I recently wrote in order to enter into the dialogue with all people about our common home. We need a conversation which includes everyone, since the environmental challenge we are undergoing and its human roots concern and affect us all. In Laudato Si, I call for a courageous and responsible effort to redirect our steps and to avert the most serious effects of the environmental deterioration caused by human activity. I'm convinced that we can make a difference. I'm sure. And I have no doubt that the United States and this Congress have an important role to play. Now is the time for courageous action and strategies aimed at implementing a culture of care and an integrated approach to combating poverty, restoring dignity to the excluded, and at the same time, protecting nature. We have the freedom needed to limit and direct technology, to devise intelligent ways of developing and limiting our power, and to put technology at the service of another type of progress, one which is here, more human, more social, more integral. In this regard, I am confident that America's outstanding academic and research institutions can make a vital contribution in the years ahead. A century ago, at the beginning of the Great War, which Pope Benedict XV termed a pointless slaughter, another notable American was born, the Cistercian monk Thomas Merton. He remains a source of a spiritual inspiration and guide for many people. In his autobiography, Merton wrote, "I came into the world free by nature in the image of God. I was, nevertheless, the prisoner of my own violence. I must own selfishness in the image of the world into which I was born." That world was the picture of hell, full of men like myself, loving God and yet hating him, born to love him, living instead in fear of hopeless self-contradictory hangers. Merton was, above all, a man of prayer, a thinker who challenged the certitudes of this time and opened new horizons for souls and for the church. He was also a man of dialogue, a promoter of peace between peoples and religions. From this perspective of dialogue, I would like to recognize the efforts made in recent months to help overcome historic differences linked to painful episodes of the past. It is my duty to build bridges and to help all men and women in any way possible to do the same. When countries which have been at odds resume the path of the dialogue, a dialogue which may have been interrupted for the most legitimate of reasons, new opportunities open up for all. This that required and requires courage and daring, which is not the same as irresponsibility. A good political leader is one who, with the interests of all in mind, seizes the moment in a spirit of openness and pragmatism. A good political leader always opts to initiate processes rather than possessing space. Being at the service of dialogue and peace also means being truly determined to minimize and in the long term to end the many armed conflicts throughout our world. Here we have to ask ourselves, why are deadly weapons being sold to those who plan to inflict untold suffering on individuals and society? Sadly, the answer, as we all know, is simply for money. Money that is drenched in blood, often innocent blood, in the face of the shameful and culpable silence, it is our duty to confront the problem and to stop the arms strife. Three sons and one daughter of this land, four individuals have four dreams. Lincoln, liberty. Martin Luther King, Liberty in plurality and non-exclusion. Dorothy Day, social justice and the rights of persons. And Thomas Merton, the capacity for dialogue and openness to God. Four representatives of American people. I will end my visit to your country in Philadelphia, where I will take part in the World Meeting of Families. It is my wish that throughout my visit, the family should be a recurrent theme. How essential the family has been to the building of this country. And how worthy it remains for our support and encouragement. Yet, I cannot hide my concern for the family, which is threatened, perhaps as never before, from within and without. Fundamental relations are being called into question, as is the very basis of marriage and the family. I can only reiterate the importance and above all, the richness and the beauty of family life. In particular, I would like to call attention to those family members who are the most vulnerable, the young. For many of them, a future filled with countless possibilities beckons. Yet so many others seem disoriented and aimless, trapped in a hopeless maze of violence, abuse, and despair. Their problems are our problems. We cannot avoid them. We need to face them together, to talk about them, and to seek effective solutions rather than getting bogged down in discussion. At the risk of oversimplifying, we might say that we live in a culture with precious young people known to start a family because they lack possibilities for the future. Yet, the same culture presents others with so many options that they too are dissuaded from starting a family. A nation can be considered great when it defends liberty, as Lincoln did, when it fosters a culture which enables people to dream of full rights for all brothers and sisters, as Martin Luther King sought to do. When it strives for justice and the cause of the oppressed, as Dorothy Day did by her tireless work, the fruit of a faith which becomes dialogue and soothe peace in the contemplative style of Thomas Merton. In this remark, I have sought to present some of the richness of your cultural heritage, of the spirit of the American people. It is my desire that this spirit continue to develop and grow so that as many young people as possible can inherit and dwell in a land which has inspired so many people to dream. God bless America.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to a special expanded edition of Thursday's Community Watch and Comment, the On the Ground edition on 89.3 WPFW, Pacifica's listener-powered station for jazz and justice in the nation's capital. We just heard Pope Francis as he addressed Congress, addressing a range of issues including immigration, discrimination, racism, and climate change. And we are going to go to the top of the hour right now. We're going to take a little break. And when we come back, we're going to hear more voices from not inside Capitol Hill, but outside Capitol Hill on the Mall today. And we're going to actually have the opportunity to speak to Archbishop George Augustus Stallings about Catholicism here in the Washington, D.C. area, and particularly African-American Catholicism. We're going to go to a break, and we'll be right back.